Hi, this is Roland Reinhardt at NewMediaSandbox.com. I got to go to PodCamp NYC on April 25th, 2008. I got to sit in on some great sessions. The following was called Securing a Sponsor in the New Media Space. It was presented by Todd Cochran and Jeff Hines from Raw Voice and Blueberry Network. You can reach them over at rawvoice.com, rawvoice.com. Let's listen.
Good afternoon. My name is Todd Cochran. I'm the CEO of Raw Voice. I'm a podcaster as well. I have a podcast that I do. It's called the Geek News Central Podcast. I've been podcasting since October 2004, 360-some shows. Been involved in podcast advertising probably since about May of 2005. And for those of you that don't know, I have a book on podcasting. It's a couple that's actually dated now. It was out in 2005 with Wiley. Podcasting do-it-yourself guide. But what I want to share with you today is some information that I've acquired over the years now in the space, kind of my reflections on what I've seen happen with some other shows, and give you some ideas on how to find and what to do to prepare to have a sponsor. I guess a little history. You know, podcasting obviously got going in 2004. The sponsors have been slow to come to space, but they have been in the space since 2005, I was responsible for bringing GoDaddy into the space. There was the, and they're probably the best known for advertising on shows, and worked with some other sponsors as well. I think the biggest questions that people in the new media space have to ask themselves is, should I look for an advertiser? And there's a reason for that. Is it worth it? How big's your show? Do you have 100 listeners? Do you have 1,000 listeners? Do you have 10,000 listeners? What's your focus? So you really have to think about whether or not you want to pursue getting a sponsor, because it's a lot of work, and you may end up not getting a big reward for that work. If you've got a niche show that has a very focused topic or very focused content, you'll probably do well in finding a sponsor that would fit in with that niche, and you could probably make good money with it. But many shows don't fit into a tight niche, so they have a harder time finding a sponsor that makes it worthwhile to do this. Also, are you in the space to do this as a business, or is this a hobby? I find a lot of new media creators, a lot of podcasters, that say they want to make money in the space, but when it comes time to doing it, they don't really want to treat it like a business. It's still a hobby. And I'll talk a little bit more about that later. So when I got into podcasting, I did it for one thing. I knew from the day one, this was not gonna be a hobby. This was gonna be a business for me. And I treated my show like a business. Set up a little side company, helped to establish a brand, and treated it like a business from day one. Some of you, they're in the hobby space. If it's a hobby for you, fine, but you really want to earn money off your show that way. All right, let's say you made the decision to go ahead and find a sponsor. And what I'm gonna do here is just flash through these slides real quick, and we're gonna open up the conversation, and I have Jeff say a few things at the end. But preparation. Well, there's a few things you do need to do. Your content, you gotta have your content dialed in. And if you're doing adult formatted content, and you want a sponsor, you've got a bigger road to climb. Your content's rated G, well, it may be easier, because some advertisers are not going to want to be in a brand or in a show that has adult content. So that's a factor you have to consider. Consistency. All right, this goes back to the hobby and business thing on podcasting. Are you producing a show once a month, every once in a while, every week, twice a week? The key here is, if you want to really get your show set up to have a sponsor, is you really need to have some consistency. Because if you're going to get a sponsor, the sponsor's going to expect X number of, ad runs in each of your show each month. And if you're not consistent, it just doesn't make for a good base, or in other words, it doesn't make for a good show to be in. Now, I'm not saying that you can be inconsistent and not have a sponsor. I'm not saying that. But it is better to be consistent. Your website. Where do you have your podcast? Do you have it on a blog that's just a WordPress generic blog with no branding on it, no Nothing that signifies that this is some kind of site that's special, that's related to your content. In other words, what does your website look like? Because believe it or not, a sponsor's gonna come to your website, a prospective sponsor's gonna come to your website, and they're gonna say, the content may be great, the audio or video content may be great, but the website looks like crap. You know, do they want to associate their brand with your website? Especially if they're gonna put their banner ads on your website. Your RSS feed. This is a pet peeve of mine, and the only reason I put it in here is because if your RSS feed is not validating and your content's not getting consumed on all of the aggregators that's available, in other words, if the feed's invalid and you're not getting your show updated into iTunes as required, so always make sure you pay attention to your RSS feed. And feedvalidator.org would be your best friend for your podcast RSS feed. Well, finding advertisers. This is the imperial challenge that we all face. Advertisers are a little bit leery of the new media space. So what do? Do you go on your own? If you can, that's the best way to go. You don't have to pay somebody's company like mine a little bit of a percentage to find you a sponsor. You get to keep 100% of that sponsorship dollar. That's always the best. Or you can use a network, and there's multiple networks out there, lots of companies that are willing to help you out finding an advertiser, but it's hit and miss. The best thing to do is maybe try to do both. Try to find a podcast advertiser on your own, and also use a network, and see what they can do for you. Media kits. You have a media kit? If someone calls you today and say, hey, I want to advertise on your show. Can I get your media kit, or can I get your rate card? Well, what should a media kit contain? Well, a media kit can be really a pretty simple document. Who you are, who your audience is. If you don't know who your audience is, then, you know, set up a simple survey. 10 or 12 questions that you have your listeners answer. Age, male or female, education level, basic demographic information that you can provide in your media kit. Track record. You need to have in there somewhere, yeah, I've done 100 shows, I've done 20, I've done 10. It will make, you know, I would not necessarily put if I only done 10 shows in my media kit, but if you've done 100 shows, you want to play that up. Next question you need to ask yourself is how much? How much should I ask for? If you have 1,000 listeners and you're talking about basket weaving, maybe you can find a basket weaving company that would be willing to pay you a good sponsorship amount because you're hitting a niche audience. This is a very difficult question. It'll be different for every show. There's multiple ways you can go about it. You can go on flat sponsorship, which are usually the best. They usually pay the best. CPM-based buys, cost per 1,000. So if you only got 1,000 listeners on your show and you're doing 8 shows a month, that's 8,000 times whatever that base rate is. Or CPA, cost per acquisition. In other words, you're performing. You have to perform to get sales. And you only get paid if a sale is made. Again, back to that's what type? CPM, flat rate, CPA. The proposal. Advertisers are going to want a proposal. So you're going to want to put in that proposal when the advertising deal starts, when it stops, how much money you're going to make, or how much money they're going to pay, what the conditions of the buy are. In other words, are you going to have a banner ad on your website? Are you going to have a text link in your show notes? Are you going to have a 15, 30, or 45-second post-read ad spot? Are you going to have a canned spot that the advertiser provides to you? That's, you know, that has to all go in your proposal. And you want a signed contract. I got an email from a guy last week. He said, Todd, I want to confirm that I'm on a buy with you. I said, yeah, you confirmed, you already replied to the confirmation that I'd sent out. I said, why are you double confirming? He says, because I did an ad deal with a company, run their ad for 3 months, sent them a bill, and they said, you didn't have a deal. So he didn't have a signed piece of paper with the company's name on it, agreeing to the terms. So always have a proposal and always have something signed that keeps you legal, keeps them legal. Then there's no questions asked. It's business. Now, Remember I talked about that hobbyist? Or someone's running this as a business? As much as I hate to say this, you have to be a salesman. You better get behind your sponsor as the best you can. If you've got a sponsor that you can't get behind, it's better not having that sponsor at all. Because the minute you open your mouth to talk about a product that you're not behind, your listeners are going to pick up on that in an instant. So if it's a company that you can't stand behind, I'd say no deal. And then you better sell that product if you want to keep that sponsor. Lots of shows, I've listened to a lot of shows, and you hear the guy, well, today I want to thank the sponsor, blah, blah, blah. You know, kind of lukewarm. You want to be excited, you want to talk about it, you want to talk it up, you want to know the product. If a company has sponsored you to sell basketballs, you better have bought one of their basketballs, and you better played with it, you better know how it feels, texture. That way, when you are talking about it in your show, and you're giving that host endorsement, the audience knows you know that. Now, if it's a car, well, you may even need to go test drive a car. Whatever it is, try to get to know your product well. So you have to sell. This is the biggest thing I see with the shows that fail in their advertising deals. They do not sell. Now, some of you may disagree with this term, but I really believe you have to be a salesman. All right, kind of got the cart before the horse, but let's say you got that deal. Go ahead.
Regarding the last thing you mentioned as far as salesmanship, is it important, do you feel it's important to first make sure that you can talk well about the product before actually deciding to accept the sponsorship? Or is there an understanding, can you be upfront and say, listen, you know, I'll talk about your product, but I'm going to be, basically going to lay the cards on the table the way I see it. And, you know, maybe it's like a B+, and I talk about the good points, but also mention, you know, from on a transparency level, mention the flaws that you see, which would maybe make the product still a little bit more real in the eyes of the listeners.
That's a double-edged sword. I have known people that will call out the flaws of their sponsor. Maybe they see something that isn't quite right, but yet still endorse the product, and that's worked well. But you have to be very, very careful. How is the sponsor going to react to that? So that's a call on your part. And you may need the difference between, this is what I'm saying, you better be able to get behind that product from get-go if you're going to have it in your show.
Are you going to cover anything about there are people who actually are the makers of the product, and then you're really talking to agencies who are representing the companies that make the product?
Right.
And the sales approach to one is different than the other.
It all depends. I've dealt with agencies before who have been more open to me talking or have our people talk about a product, where the company itself wanted to do it by a strict script.
No, I mean, it's just the sales approach to an agency is a lot different than the sales approach to going directly to the company.
Oh, absolutely.
Are you going to cover that?
I can talk about it. We can. Basically, the question is, do you go to the company direct? Do I go to company X directly, or do I go to company X agency? Most big companies have an agency that sell their media. Agencies work on a, actually, Jeff is going to talk about agency stuff at the end, so I won't preempt some of his stuff.
The only thing I'll say is agencies will put up a wall, and we found it's easier to go directly to a client than to an agency. And, you know, I can give you some of my anecdotes on why agencies are not buying into podcast advertising.
I think it's always better to go directly to the company if you can. You know, but it's enough, and if you have a connection in the company, obviously, you use that connection to get your foot in the door. So maybe I'll let you talk a little bit more about that at the end, but agencies typically buy advertising, buys on a quarterly basis. They don't write small checks. They want to write a big check. So you can call them up and say, hey, I got a podcast that's doing this, and they may, it's not even worth the paper to do this deal. So that's maybe the challenge with an agency, whereas a company may say, oh, yeah, maybe we'll try this. All right, you got the deal, execute, 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 make sure you execute according to that agreement. If you get the, and I'm not telling you you have to go beyond what's in the agreement, but boy, I tell the people we work with, work really hard to make sure that, you're representing that sponsor good, because if you do, next quarter they're going to renew. They may not always, but generally they will if you execute well. Engage your audience. This whole space is about engagement. We all talk to our audiences, we get emails from them, we get voicemails from them, they give us feedback. You know, you really need to engage your audience. In relation to your sponsor, I build into my show storylines that bring me into the ad sponsorship spot. That's the way I do it. You may want to do it a different way. But learn how to engage your audience with your vendor. Build it into the conversation. Ask for feedback. Ask your audience, do you like the product? Do you hate the product? And then, when they say they hate the product, don't be afraid to say that on your show. And don't be afraid to give that feedback back to the client. The biggest rewards we've had from the clients we've worked with is taking negative input, sending it to their corporate leadership and saying, you got a problem. And guess what they do? They listen to customers and they generally fix what's wrong. So if you get negative feedback, give that to them because that may be more valuable to them than the actual return on new customers. They may improve a process within their company. A little story. I don't want to go much longer here, so I want to open this up to everyone, is that I had a bad experience with a sponsor. And I mean, this was before they were a sponsor. And I dogged them on my show. I talked bad about them. They found out about that. They called me. They made a change. This was before they were a sponsor. I said, wow, that company listens. That's a company I want to be behind. And then 3 months later, when a separate person calls to actually set up the deal, they didn't even know about this prior discussion. So I was already kind of set up to think that this company was a good company. Roadblocks, there's gonna be all kinds of roadblocks. Show's too small. Audience isn't the audience that they want to hit. So just try to reduce the negatives. Make sure your website looks good. Make sure the content sounds good. Be consistent. Remove all the roadblocks you can. Use contacts that you have. That's the only way, that's the way you're gonna get your foot in the door, is through contacts. I'm gonna let Jeff talk about media buyer perspectives and then go ahead. Generally, he's asking about what we provide back to the sponsors. What I do as a company is I provide, if it's a CPM-based deal, we have our own internal statistics service that we built from the ground up, and we provide, actually they get access, they log in, and on day to day they can see what their buy is doing. Generally, by Monday morning, they have to walk into their boss and say, this campaign is doing this campaign's doing this, and we make it easy for them. They just go in, log in, and they get a PDF. Now, if you're doing this on your own, be prepared to give your sponsor feedback on a weekly basis, or they may ask. They may say, just tell me monthly what you've done. They may not require a weekly report. That's on your downloads or on your, how do you deliver your show?
We deliver it live.
Uh-huh.
It's also archived.
Right.
So if whoever goes to our page and clicks on the download button, or whoever is logging in, at the time our show is broadcast 4 times a week. So every time somebody goes to our page, click to listen or click on the archive.
There's a lot of different methods that different companies are using. Most of the podcasting companies out there have some sort of statistics package. I would be very cautious using internally web stats or something that's on, if you're hosting your content yourself, I'd be very, 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 very cautious of doing that, because generally those numbers are nowhere near right. and they're not going to give, you're not going to do yourself justice. Because if you have done a deal, and let's say you tell that advertiser that show X received 10,000 downloads, and you got that from a system that you are using to calculate yourself, and it was actually 1,000, well, what you have done really is you've really kicked yourself in the butt, because if you had 1,000 and you got 10 responses to that, that's a pretty good response rate for 1,000. But if you had 10,000 listeners and you got a 10 people response, it's a much, much lower click-through rate, and the advertiser can say, forget it. So whatever you do, don't over-report. You know, if you're required to report stuff back. Jeff?
All right. I think that, you know, a lot of the things that Todd mentioned about, you know, treating your podcast as a business make a lot of sense. If you're looking to gain a sponsor, from my perspective as a media buyer, I buy and plan media in the digital space and do it for a number of years, and the biggest hurdle is me, the media buyer, okay? I'm pretty much your worst enemy, because it's difficult for me to recommend a podcast as an advertisement vehicle to my clients for a number of reasons. One, a lot of podcasts are user-generated content. My clients don't want to be in user-generated content, okay? So I have to sell them on this. So if I'm going to sell them on this, you guys as podcasters have to sell me on what are the benefits of me wanting to recommend you to my clients, okay? Is your show a unique show that has content that no one else speaks about? That's something that's a benefit. Is your show presented in an authoritative manner, or a show that your listeners resonate with you and they listen to you, and if you tell them to jump, they'll jump? And can you prove that to me in your media kit or however? So you have to have a benefit that you can sell to that media buyer, whether it's the largest show, the most downloads, the most unique show, the show that people jump to when I say jump, or there's some compelling argument that cuts through all the clutter of all the other user-generated content that you can then say, you guys should advertise with me because my show does this for you, Mr. Advertiser or Mr. Agency Individual. Okay, that's really the big hurdle. The additional hurdle is a lot of media buyers don't know if this is a digital media buy or if it's an audio media buy, like radio. Nobody knows where it fits in the media mix because it could be one or the other. A lot of radio buyers would love to buy podcasts because it's new and unique and it gives them something to talk about as far as being innovative. And it's bought like a radio buy. You're buying a spot or a live read. You know, you're paying CPM prices or CPA prices, which is similar to how you speak about in radio buying. On the digital side, because it's delivered digitally, all the digital media buyers think that they should be buying it, but they don't know what to do with it either. They're comparing it to a banner buy. You know, how do you compare a download to an impression, a banner buy? So there's a lot of confusion in the marketplace, and that will get sorted out eventually. The bigger problem is most of the media buyers are 25 to 26-year-old kids. They're not listening to podcasts. They may not be listening to your show. If they're listening to your show and you know that, then tap into that person, right? So they can make that recommendation, hey, I listened to the show. It's great for my client or my product. So there's a lot of hurdles to overcome, but as Todd mentioned, if you treat your show like a business, if you treat your audience like someone you want to engage and have passion and speak about on topics that you have passion for, I think you overcome a lot of those hurdles, but it still is a challenge. And I think that that's one of the things that's frustrating on my end from an agency media buyer, is trying to figure out how to get more dollars into the podcasting space. And a lot of it comes back to clients now, especially you're looking for what's that return on investment. If I spend my money with you, Mr. Podcaster, what are you going to do for me? Can you increase sales? Can you drive people to my retail store? Can you get people to sign up for something? How does that compare to an outdoor board or a magazine ad, which is very easy to buy and something that I understand? So there's all these different hurdles. So if you think about your podcast in that regard and say, well, this is what I'm good at, this is what I think I can deliver, this is where I'm unique, then that makes it easier for you to think about what types of sponsors may be right for your show or what types of people you could talk to. A lot of podcasters get a lot of sponsorships from people that are in line with their editorial content. I was speaking to some podcasters last week at the New York Comic Con who do comic podcasts, and they reach out to all the comic book publishers and all the comic book retail stores directly, and that's who they get as sponsors, because
they understand their content, and they understand that the listeners to those shows have a passion for comic books, and there's a relationship there, and there's value to those comic book publishers and those comic book retail stores to sponsor those audio podcasts, okay? So you need to think about things in that regard and try and connect the dots, and I think that will make it much easier for you trying to determine how to find a sponsor and which sponsors make sense. And as Todd mentioned, try a lot of different things. Maybe reach out to some clients on your own, people that you, people and products that you use and you like and you endorse and make sense for your show. Or get involved in a network. Try an affiliate program where you're trying to sell something, trying to get people to raise their hand and buy products or click on banners on your website. See what works, what doesn't work. You know, I've tried a few things with my show. It's a music show. I don't feel like advertising on my show makes sense. It doesn't feel right for me. You know, if I could do something that said, you know, my show is unique enough that I can get a label to sponsor something because I can help them sell records, that would be great. That's not really where my show is at. I guess it's more of a hobby, sorry to say, Todd. But, you know, I do treat it like a business in that the websites and the RSS feed and everything I do around the show as far as trying to push it out from a marketing perspective, I'm very consistent about and very, you know, methodical about it, you know, my publishing schedule and everything in that regard. So I agree with Todd in that manner. I'm going to ask Roland, who also works at an advertising agency who I've worked with, did I miss anything, any of the hurdles on why you can't get clients to advertise in podcasts?
I think one of the things that I've struggled with over the last 18 or 20 years is educating clients. Clients are often stuck in the mentality of what works. So, you know, what works? Television is good for generating impressions, radio, print. Direct mail is one of those mediums that they're very comfortable with because they know it becomes a little bit more targeted, you get better return on results. But the experimentation in digital media and these evolving and emerging forms is something they don't understand because, you know, decision makers tend to be a lot older with more established brands. It's taking a lot, it's a slower process for brands to make those progressions into experimentation and to allocate more of their budgets towards experimentation. I mean, a lot of the big brands like Procter & Gamble is probably one of the better examples of a brand that each year contributes more of its advertising budget, like, you know, one year it's 10%, next year it's 15%, next year it's 20% towards experimenting in new and emerging media. And that's a great step. But when you look at other major brands and manufacturers, they don't. They're still stuck in the same sort of mentality of what works, what's safe, what's conservative. So, you know, trying to find that brand or advertiser that is, you know, willing to make an investment, make a step forward, and, you know, take a risk with you because they don't understand you. You're not an established player. You're not a, you know, a broadcast channel or somebody that has the backing of, you know, of lawyers and corporate entity and big fat wallet that, you know, if you do something wrong, that there's a way of getting recompensation from you. They're taking a big risk, and therefore you need to do as much as you can to educate them on how you're going to be able to motivate your audience, and then how are you going to be able to, you know, build some sort of long-term relationship. It's not about just being in and out quick. It's about establishing relationship over time and working with that brand over time, because that's, I mean, the longevity of a podcast, as we all know, it's recorded once and it's played many times. It doesn't evaporate into the ether as a radio show would. So, you know, that's another one of those points that you have to remember. It's like this becomes archived, and the brand's message is going to be out there for a long time to come. And just because the person wasn't here on the day it was released doesn't mean that somebody won't pick it up 6 months from now and totally get with that advertiser, you know, connect with that advertiser. So I hope that helps you.
We got two questions.
Start in the back, I think, was first. So I'll take them in order.
With what he was saying, I think, I don't know necessarily, you know, if that's really the case, because you'll see magazines now. Magazines today are not what they were, you know, a number of years ago when they were general, you know, issues of just everything. Now they're more niche market, more targeted, because they know they had, in order to survive, they had to be more niche towards a particular market where they could go to their advertisers and say, hey, look, we are a sports magazine, you know, Sports Illustrated, we can get your Nike product in here, and we know that the people who are gonna look at this magazine are going to buy your product because it's related to what they're reading. So I don't know, and I think you're starting to see a lot of companies, large companies,
Can I respond to that?
I have to just say from my perspective, because I'm an account director, so I spent a lot of time working with existing clients as well as like pitching new clients. And that's one, and it's one of the things that I find frustrating, and I guess you find from a media perspective frustrating, is this constant education cycle. Because, and I don't mind educating and hosting lunch and learns, and even just one-on-one meet and greets for coffees to try to help executives in a, you know, non-confrontational, non-threatening way, sort of understand the media and understand the buzzwords and understand what, you know, the lower managers, their direct reports are sort of talking about, but the executive may not really quite comprehend. I mean, I do that all the time, and still, with all the levels of education and trying to get buy-in one person at a time, it's still an enormous uphill battle. Now, yes, there are a lot of people who are very progressive, but it's not at like a fast adoption rate by any means. I can't name the clients that I'm working with right now, but there are like Motor Oil, Vision Care, Consumer Packaged Good, medical devices. It's fascinating because, you know, there is this opportunity, and all we're saying is we know ways to take a small budget, even if you want to invest like $25,000, which is just nothing to a large manufacturer, take $25,000, set it aside, and go and very structure a very comprehensive plan for a significant period of time, say 6 to 12 months. We'll use that money wisely rather than just, you know, sort of a one-off that's you blow your wad in a week. And they'll still find frustration and like hesitation at that because it's of the unknown. So I don't know.
Let's go ahead right here.
You know, I mean, there's a million things running through my head right now, and there's only room for 500,000. You know, all advertising was experimental at one point. You know, and I'm just finding it so hard to understand that, you know, we're at these events, we're sitting here. I mean, are we all nuts? Are we out of our mind? We get it. It makes sense to us. It's very logical. Yet you walk into an ad agency and they look at you like you've got something growing out of the top of your head. Yet, you know, I've been in parking lots and I've seen advertising on the stripes between the spaces for a television show. And I'm like, who's the genius that sold that to the client? You know, they're buying stripes in parking lots and they don't get the narrow casting concept of podcasting where we're going to deliver the message to the person that's going to buy the product. What don't you get? You know, and it just seems like the ad agencies run interference for the clients and don't give the clients even a chance to say, you know what, this doesn't sound so bad. Let's move some of these print dollars into somewhere where these customers are absorbing their content now. You know, and I'm not sure, you know, we're 2 plus 3, almost 3 years into this, and it's like we're running in circles, you know, and no one's seeing what we're seeing.
Feel your pain.
You know?
Feel your pain.
Yeah. You know, and the other thing is, it was just brought up, you know, how can they gauge if they're running 4 ads in your podcast?
They can't.
They say, oh, I didn't get anything. Well, of course you didn't get anything. You know, you got to run for a year or 6 months or create a campaign that you can build momentum with. So these experimental ad budgets that they may throw, you know, we had a sponsor that came on and took 4 episodes, and they really didn't see very well. Of course, you didn't see very much.
I got some evidence to go along with that. Is that I generally will not do a deal unless I can go at a minimum 6 weeks. I want to go 3 months. I want to go a 4 quarter. But generally, we've seen new campaigns come on and the real traction because of the delay and because everyone's on different publishing schedules. You're putting the media out there, some of your shows get consumed right away. Some of your stuff is consumed over 2 weeks. So 1, 2, 3 listens, 4 listens, then we start to see a striking increase in the response rate. You're right, absolutely got to have a little longer tail. I'd say 6 weeks to 3 months at a minimum to run a campaign. We're all over the place. Go ahead. You're asking.
This is just like an idea that wouldn't be appropriate for everyone's podcast. But like, if you have a locally focused podcast that's like about your neighborhood or some, you know, bike culture in your city or whatever, right? Then you can go. Then now, I haven't done this. This isn't from experience, but it seems like maybe you could just go to the small business, go to the bike shop, or go to the whatever in your neighborhood.
That's a niche show that
could
do good.
That's, yeah, and you know, the sponsorships can be kind of small in dollar terms, but it makes your show seem more important because people are actually sponsoring it. You're part of your local community, and they see they're always used to, you know, people trying to sell Girl Scout cookies or sponsor their softball team or whatever, you know, and it's kind of for people who might have a local focus.
To go along with that, I've seen podcasters that don't have niche shows that kind of have a general talk type show come to me and say, Todd, I want to do an advertising deal. I say, great, we can help you out, but I want $1,000 a month or 1,000 listeners. And I'm like, go ahead, if you can get, you know, again, it's not a niche show.
Right.
Whereas a niche show may be able to demand 5,000 or 10,000 for those 1,000 listeners, you know, if it's a niche show. Let's go on to back.
I work with professional sports team. We have money, we have the legal background, we have a TV production crew, we have radio guys at our disposal, we have a podcast, we have all these properties, and the problem is convincing companies, convincing media buyers that there's all these resources, and they're asking questions like, well, how many impressions? And they're asking questions that really aren't going to return value to them. And I mean, you kind of hit on that, like re-educating the buyers and the companies.
People come for a broadcast.
Single biggest challenge. I mean, salesmen have to really understand what they're selling, but I mean, we could be an in-house production for anybody. They don't even need to produce their own ads anymore because we've got all the resources, and kind of like the Red Sox are doing that now for the teams. And it's just the biggest problem is not doing it, it's selling.
I think us as a collective have to get out there, and as we're talking to people, and we use our tree of contacts, it's going to have to be a continual process. Let me go here. I think you were next.
So Google has demonstrated that you get people to pay more for ads that are pulled, right? If I do a search for something, I've done a self-identified, and so that principle has at least been set up in that context. What about opt-in kind of programs for people who are saying to you, for example, for the next 30 days, I'm interested in ads for buying cars because I'm going to buy a car in the next month. Any experience with seeing that kind of model working or being experimented with anywhere?
It's hard to get that type of stuff turned on. You know, it takes.
Okay, well, let's assume you can get it turned on.
It's you know, I think that it's a good model, but I think it's a tough sell.
Still a tough sell.
Yeah.
Small business show, but built the show that we actually go to authors and we interview authors. We have bookstores that are sponsors, we have publishing companies that are sponsors. But it took us, just like you were saying, an education period for them to understand we were one of the first shows on Blog Talk that did African American authors. And right now we're the top rated show on it. And it still takes me about 5 calls and about 3 different PDFs. I have 3 different type PDFs that I sent to them. To show them the reason why, even though I'm in this show, which I can say, and we have 31,000 opt-in African American readers, and it's still an education period. And we just added the Google, we actually put a bookstore on, which is free for Google, but you can put a business on Google Map. And that's free, most small businesses don't know that. We added that, we keep adding other things in to make the pot sweeter, and it still takes some time to get it. I will do it because I see the added value in doing it. So I think it's just a guarantee we have to educate everybody right now, even though we're on traditional radio and we're on Blog Talk.
And these same advertisers have no problem just throwing money at terrestrial radio.
The tech companies have no problem with it. I haven't dealt with anybody because our show on Monday nights is technology. So I haven't dealt with anybody but tech companies.
We worked from the other end. We established a brand outside for the last year, so I read the Brooklyn Fashion Gallery. We've actually been approached by businesses to start marketing and advertising. We've built a brand and a reputation. We've experimented with what podcasting and blogging, we do fashion, etc. What I've found is there is a reason they're not going there. They don't understand the field. We're out there explaining the field, so that it's natural to them to come for us saying, hey, we want to do this. And we've actually responded to one of the upstream teams now because we had to develop an advertising program to go up because there was the opportunities. Advertise shop asked me, hey, we want to put ads on a site we're just in the process of launching. So it's not just a question of I have this, I need you to advertise. There were 7,000 web apps released last year. I'm from Brooklyn. If I walk any length of streets, most of those merchants do not even have, and this is from the library, etc. The only one that is delving into new media is the Brooklyn Museum. They do not even have Gmail accounts. They're just starting out. So it goes beyond the space. We went to the parks on a project we're doing, and we literally have to sit down and walk them through everything. They don't understand what's an RSS feed. How do people find you? Can you do this? They're expecting, well, this has to be a huge corporation. Who have you? So it's a case of educating. And most of the people who are dealing on online are servicing an online community, which may not necessarily be your advertiser. So they don't know who you are. They don't know where to find you. So yes, it's going to take some time, but it's still difficult for radio to get ads sometimes. So we're 2-3 years old and we're complaining. I think we have to realize that it is a matter of educating, going to the local newspapers, speaking about it, speaking about the opportunity and the success stories. People follow where they see others making money.
I think too is I get to see lots of stats, and I know what the general audience size is of shows. I think there's a challenge people come up with is, okay, how am I going to monetize a show that has 3,000, 5,000, 10,000 listeners? And it is a challenge. So it's something to consider. Go ahead. Did I miss you? No, go ahead.
Well, when radio was the popular mass medium, and then television came along, television was actually pushed back because radio was so dominant for such a long time. They actually delayed the release of broadcast, and when it was released, and then they stole all of radio's talent, and basically they put them on television. Right now, the internet is still very young, so we're, like everyone else was saying, we're still in an educational stage, where we're trying to get corporations to buy into us, but I think that, you know, it just seems that a number of people who try to do this, they factor out that there are still newspapers, and there are still magazines, and there's still CNN and NBC and ABC. They should try and talk to them, because once you get your press release to CNN or ABC or NBC, and they cover a news story on broadcast television, you're automatically start to become more well-known. Once you're on the 5 o'clock news, the 6 o'clock news, and you're on CNN, more people are going to see you. So maybe you should stop, maybe, you know, contact the corporations, but maybe try to get closer towards the current mass media, aside from just the internet, but also television stations, newspapers, magazines. Get yourself in there, because you know that's already an established media. Once you're in the established media, you have a better chance of going to someone and say, hey, look, I was in so-and-so, I was on ABC, I was on NBC.
Yeah, that's a whole aspect of promotion we haven't talked about, but you're right.
And I think you're also hitting a point that you have to prove your value and your worth to advertisers. And I mean, if a lot of you are thinking about, should I have a sponsorship, should I run advertising, you know, would it make sense, do people respond to me? You know, a simple way to do that is put up a poll or a quiz on your website, you know, with a couple questions, and tell people in your podcast, oh, I just put up this poll. Go to the poll and, you know, tell me what you think, you know, A, B, or C, whether it's about something in the show or something you like or even a product. Look at the results, then you know if people are responding to what you're saying on your show. And then if you think enough people are responding to you and taking action, then you can use that information to go to an advertiser and say, look, when I say something on my show, people go to my website and they take action. That's why my audience is valuable, and that's why I can help you sell your product. So it gives you something to talk about and gives you a credibility that advertisers want to hear.
I've had shows that had about 3,000 listeners outperform shows that had 50,000 listeners. outright outperform them in return on dollar that the advertiser saw. So just because you're small doesn't mean that you can't they can't be have a valuable property. You didn't go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say something that I wanted to add is that this is because I have a lot of discussions with my work around these same sorts of issues, and the answer that I find nobody ever really wants to hear though is that a lot of the when you talk about money being thrown at the agencies and the establishment of properties, there's a lot of trust involved.
Oh yeah.
I share an office with someone who's he's probably in his 60s, and until recently he was in the newspaper publishing field, and he's launching a website. This is someone who, you know, by his own admission, can barely use email, but he's hired people on to do the media end of it. But he can pick up a phone, and within a week he had, I'm from Toronto, and he's got about 10 of the major tourism buyers in the city already lined up, simply because he's consistently developed a track record.
Yeah.
And I think that's a big part of it too, and that's the frustrating part, especially because the media is new, it's very hard. If you're new to the industry, if you don't have contacts, it's hard to just spend, you know, the 5 to 10 years it takes going around meeting with people, getting them to know you.
And the challenges we find is that 50% of shows don't make it to show 20.
Yeah.
I kill on a monthly basis off our website 300 to 400 shows that have pod faded. If you make it to 25 shows, you're doing pretty good. So that's the reality here. Go ahead.
You know, I'm wondering why, as podcasters, we haven't explored the pay subscription model for revenue generation, as opposed to, you know, going after sponsorship and it remaining free. You know, people go out and spend anywhere between $4 and $10 per issue for a magazine. They're buying seasons of television shows that they could watch for free, or on the cable system that they're already paying $100+ a month for. They're downloading it 99 cents an episode just to have the ability to time shift it and carry it with them. Maybe the movement should be to be charging 20 cents or 30 cents or 50 cents or $1 a download.
If you have
and do that. I mean, it hasn't really even been, I mean, Ricky Gervais was really the only one that stepped into that arena. You know, maybe we're barking up the wrong tree.
If you have an engaged audience, it might be something you can't hurt.
It's
go ahead.
I started about 2 months ago in the process of going into subscription models, and I'm going to be setting up some plus feeds that will have extra content that the free feeds won't. Kind of the same model he's going. I'm doing it on my own. I haven't even actually reserved anything that's not available for free already. I've got 82 people signed up to pay me $10 a month, so it's definitely the path I'm going.
Are you doing that? How are you delivering that content?
That's not what I'm working out, but I've got 82 people that say, hey, I'm supporting you all the way. Just tell me when to turn it on. So,
go ahead.
Yeah, there's been a couple years on really building a community.
Yeah.
You know, when you're starting out, you know, you're in front of people. There's so much free content out there, which is very engaging. It's very hard. When you're putting the roadblock in front of them, you know, it's really the advertisers, I think, that help make it all. Like, there's so much. I mean, TV is free, radio is free, all of this stuff is free. There's so many outlets for free entertainment that it has to be something which is very compelling. You know, and there is a place for HBO to have their premium content. There is somewhere for satellite radio to make its area. But if you want to try to really get spread out, then, and especially when you're starting out, you really think that you have to present as few barriers as possible in order to get your word and your brand out to as many people as possible right away.
In this case, can't he do a value-added context? For example, we do free seminars, and we've dabbled in it. And what we found is that we're going into the teacher, and the extra, adding extra stuff onto this for us. As I said, we're building a business model now around it, because producing media is expensive. And we've done it for 2-3 years, dabbling in it, but until we can produce it and pay for it, it's an expensive hobby. And one of the things that you have your podcast, going into it, if you have a particular topic and adding value, onto a true portal that is subscription based only may be a way to support that. But then that depends. Are you doing media? Are you in your podcast as entertainment? Or are you a niche? Because the niche tends to have a lot more opportunity for monetizing. Your audience, you know, they're fans of it, they're dedicated to it, they're coming to it for something. Whereas if you have just an entertainment value, there's just so much free entertainment out there that you're competing. So it has to be on building added value, whether it's doing the research, added research aspects, whether it's adding photos, like something extra that you may already have had in your researching for the particular podcast.
I don't want to, I know we're almost at the time where everybody has to move from a different conference, so I'm going to wrap up with this. If people have some additional stuff they want to talk about, they can come up front, but I do have to close out this session. I will say this, it is possible with time, and I've been in this space 3 years now, it is possible with time to build up an audience and to get enough revenue for your show. And I like to put it this way, people say quit your day job, I say no, keep working your day job and get full-time wages part-time. That's the beauty. You can double your income if you work real hard at this space. Not everybody's going to do it, but it is possible. So I want to thank all of you for your great conversation. And if you have questions, come on down. But otherwise, thank you.
Thank you.